Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Horrible Podcast. I am Brian.
I'm Tyler.
And I'm Drew.
And you know, this week, the week that we're recording here, it's Halloween's on Friday. And some of us will be at the Frightening Ass Film Festival.
All of us. Everyone.
I don't know that I'll be able to make it. Yeah.
Now, Drew backed out. That's why I said all of us.
We'll see.
It's an uncomfortable situation on this end of things. So
don't want you guys stop fighting. Now. Get over what you need to get over.
So, so Friday night, if you're in Chattanooga, Halloween, come by Barking Legs Theater, the Friday Night Film Festival. We'll have comedians. We'll have...
Movies? Will there be movies there?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And, of course, movies. I was getting to that. We'll be showing The Demon's Rook, The Babadook, and The Texas Chainsaw Massacre 40th Anniversary print. We'll also have Jeff Burr of Leatherface fame there to introduce Texas Chainsaw Massacre. The guys from The Demon's Rook are going to be there to do some Q&As. We'll also have a costume contest and the bands White Reaper and Socro. I'm not a huge fan of rap, but you know, he played at Chattanooga Film Festival and was pretty amazing. So
he did
Socro,
a great job
White
live.
Reaper's a great little rock band.
Dude does a great job live. There's no doubting that.
Yeah, and you know, keeping with the theme. Oh, you know what? Before we get to that, social media, guys.
Twitter. What is that?
It's pretty important nowadays.
It is. It's the number one thing in the world.
Is it? Behind Ebola. Ebola and then Twitter are the two number one things in the world.
So like tweets about Ebola. Gigantic.
Yeah, if you're tweeting about Ebola right now, you are huge. Our Twitter feed, follow that at HorribleCast, HorribleCast. Sorry, I hope I didn't step on your toes, Brian.
It's fine. I'm fine. I'm used to it. The Facebook or the Horrible Podcast, Google. I laugh every time I say Google Plus, but it's a valid.
It's still
valid
a thing.
Social media. Yeah.
It's still a thing.
It's still a thing. Is it valid?
Well, it's with the Horrible Podcast
thing.
There.
It's kind of like how Shoney's is still a thing. Like Shoney's still exists.
True. I ate at Shoney's it's probably been a year, but I ate there and got horrible diarrhea.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And on iTunes, we're just the Horrible Podcast. And we're on Stitcher, which apparently has now become Deezer. I got the email about that. I haven't
bought out.
That seems like a really bad idea. I want to see the Deezer jokes.
Deezer's nuts.
Deezer nuts?
Yeah. So I haven't fully investigated that situation yet, but it's on the list, along with a lot of other things.
Yeah, also, if you want to email us, wolfmansgotnards, N-A-R-D-S, at thehorriblepodcast.com. If you have a question or a comment, want us to read something on the air, don't forget to email us at wolfmansgotnards. That's at thehorriblepodcast. That'll get you there.
And some of you may actually be watching us live stream this tonight. This is a
I'm
test.
I'm waving.
Woo!
We're just seeing how this all works. Mine and Drew's face are the biggest ones.
Yeah, I'm the tiny one in the corner. It just shows my stature in the podcast.
Tyler, of the three of us, has the biggest face. So he makes his window smaller.
Heed, pants,
yeah,
no.
That's exactly what
it's like. Sputnik. I have literally the most... the most head, and so that's why we have to make it smaller, because otherwise it wouldn't be able to live stream it would just crash the internet.
The most head, huh?
So tonight's episode, Brian, what are we doing this week? We're doing classic horror movies.
We are the last of our classic series, and the movie that we talk about, we reference from the director that we all know and love, and the fact that it's coming out on Halloween. Tonight we are doing Puppet Master.
Yes, the first Puppet Master.
We are doing Halloween 1979. John Carpenter. 1978. John Carpenter.
should have talked about that beforehand.
We'll take that out in post.
That's my birthday. That's my birthday horror movie.
You were born October 31st, 1978.
No, I just share the year.
Oh, gotcha.
What's your birthday horror?
My birth, I guess. 75, so I don't know what. Jaws, yeah.
It's Jaws. And I guess yours
Evil
is
Dead.
The Thing.
The Thing, yeah. Yeah. Or in hey, Evil Dead.
Let me
Evil
just
Dead
jump right into
too.
This. Did anybody else notice that when Lori is babysitting that kid that she is actually
Tommy
watching?
Doyle?
No, the girl. I'm sorry. Not Lori, but...
Annie.
She's actually watching the original Thing on the TV.
Notice that, like,
The Thing...
Many times ago.
The Thing from Another World. And what was the other... The bigger trivia question is, what was the other movie that they watched that night? There was another science fiction movie that they watched.
Science fiction double feature?
Yeah, it was a double feature. It was Thing from Another World and Escape from...
Which mountain?
No, it was something though. Like I can't. How did I forget that?
Kyle Richards' sister Kim in Escape from Witch Mountain. That we did have a Real Housewife in Halloween.
I watched it with my girlfriend, and she told me that
Kim Richards. Kyle Richards.
Kyle Richards, yeah.
Whose sister is Kim Richards, who's in the Escape movies.
How about that?
Yeah. Or actually, be more interesting to us, Kim Richards is in Assault on Precinct 13. She's the ice cream girl.
Oh, so the one that Kyle. Gets brutally murdered.
Yeah. And that's Kyle, her sister.
So, Halloween. Probably one of the most disturbing scores of any horror movie ever. It ranked that theme song after. So we've after of the big four we've watched. Even though Texas Chainsaw Massacre doesn't really have a.
Yeah.
The sound of a Polaroid camera. This has probably got to be the best of the scores.
Oh yeah.
Just because the music plays such a ominous role in it. Letting you know when Michael's there or the. It ranks up there with The Exorcist, Tubular Bells, and the creepiness factor.
Yeah, I would say that. I mean, music is more necessary in this film than it is in a lot of others, in creating the mood, because the movie Halloween is such a bright film for most of it. I mean, a lot of it's set during the day. And even though there are a few moments where it sort of like kicks in where I don't feel like it needs to during the day, just like quick little pops in, it still is just, I mean, it is the most sort of categorically, like explicitly known horror music that I can think of, other than maybe the Jaws music.
That's so terrifying. That was so terrifying.
That was a cat. That's the cat. You guys keep going. I'll be back in a second.
That was amazing. Like the door just creeped open as you started talking. Oh my God.
There was nothing there.
Yeah. The John music done by John Carpenter.
Well, yeah, certainly. Well, I mean, I've watched several of the docs and listened to commentary and things like that. You know, he talked about how he had shown a cut of it without music, and everyone was looking at it and was like, it's not very good. And then he shows the cut with music, and all of a sudden, everyone, the executives are shown to say, that's horrifying.
Yeah.
It's a terrifying movie.
So, one of the things that I noticed about this movie this time around, Halloween, is that the violence in this movie is much more sexualized than I had ever remembered it being. And it was just, I was looking at it, just like with Texas Chainsaw Massacre last week, I was looking at it more critically and happened upon some of the things that I had no idea were there before. Like, all of the violence in Halloween is very super sexualized. And, I mean, it was on purpose, but it's way more disturbing now that I was actually looking at it and thinking about what kind of violence. Like, what is this movie saying about violence? What is this movie saying about existence? You know, all of those deeper questions. But, like, everything is almost, like, weirdly sexual in this movie.
Even the first, when Michael murders his sister, the way she screams, it's almost like it's an orgasmic kind of sound. Yeah. It's not even like a, I don't know how to explain it. It's not even a terrified sound. It's more like, you know, I mean, we can get into the nitty gritty if you need to.
Well, it almost seems like that, unlike a lot of the other killers we've experienced so far, except maybe, I mean, obviously Freddy Krueger, the violence here is not explicitly sexual, but it is very, very implicitly sexual. I mean, the way that he killed his sister, the circumstances surrounding how he killed his sister, Judith, and then the way that everything happened afterwards is really very overtly sexual. And I had no idea. It doesn't change how I think about the film, but it's definitely apparent that Michael has weird sexual kinks.
Well, you know, the other thing I thought of too as I watched this is I've made this comment many times before on this podcast, on other episodes, is that the 70s must have smelled horrible, but man, they had the best boobs.
I would say that Halloween would not smell bad.
You don't think so?
No.
I mean, PJ Souls is smoking in the. We'll get to the complete lack of consideration for other people's homes by teenagers later on in this podcast. But the all I kept thinking of is like, as he, I mean, it was a good time for films and a good time for nudity in films, the 70s and the 80s.
So, Drew, what were you going to say?
Oh, I just gloss right over my comment. That's fine.
What do you want to talk about with the boobs? There aren't much.
That was it.
There aren't many.
That was it.
You seem very.
I seem kind of
briefly. I've never considered the. I guess still, what it always comes down to is with his. I've never thought about the, you know, any of the sexualization of any of it, because they just always seem to harp on the fact that, as far as motive and everything goes, he's just evil.
Yeah,
it's just that whole idea that he's just.
Maybe it's not motivation, but just the follow through. Sorry.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I'll say that after watching this film with giving it a critical eye this time, I actually think I like it a little less now compared to the other three.
Why is that? I want to hear this. Like, this is interesting.
The other three movies.
The other three.
I'll say that I'll go ahead and say I like Nightmare on Elm Street the best of the four we've watched.
Whoa.
Nightmare Age as well.
Some of it had to do with the fact that, I mean, first of all, granted, murdering one person as a 9-10-year-old kid.
Six. Six.
He was six. Okay, six-year-old kid is horrible. But
I spent 8 years.
He only killed one person, guys. Come on.
It's pretty brutal as a six-year-old to just viciously murder her and then never say anything again.
I just was not convinced.
Looking at the wall, staring through the wall.
And I also wasn't convinced that Donald Pleasance's kid, Loomis, was not crazy. You know, in all these movies, too, besides Texas Chainsaw Massacre, is it takes a huge leap of faith for any police officer to believe anything anyone says about what's going on. I mean, that the police officer in the father of, is it Laurie's father in Halloween?
It's Annie's.
It's Annie's father.
Sheriff Brackett.
Sheriff Brackett, yeah.
Lee Brackett.
It's a big leap of faith to believe that Loomis's idea that there's a crazy man who killed his family has now escaped the mental asylum and he's headed back to this exact same town on this night. Given the cockamamie story that Loomis has told him about Michael. Like, if someone told me, I'd be like, all right, dude. Okay, I get, maybe you spent a little too much time around him.
I agree with you. I think that all of these movies require that kind of thing. And
I'm not saying that I don't believe Halloween is a bad movie by any stretch of the imagination.
Of course
like,
not.
Any stretch of the imagination. I found that as watching these four films critically, I wound up at the end of it all liking Nightmare on Elm Street the best.
Halloween just looks so much better than all of them combined, though. Halloween is a fantastic, like, it's a great movie to just watch.
Totally. And I love the score.
Totally.
But no, I also stuff like, is this town shut down at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on Halloween?
It's a small town, Illinois, sure.
Back then.
The hardware store is closed at 3 p.m.
Well, it's been broken. Oh, yeah, that's true.
Break into to get their masks and their rope and their knives.
Right. We'd have to look at the actual. Maybe it was a Sunday. Maybe we don't know. No, I guess it was a Thursday or something.
They were going to have the
dance on Friday.
Because they're getting ready for the homecoming game and dance, which is the next day. And I think it says on the school sign, it says something on Saturday.
Okay.
Something weird like that.
Do they explain where the fuck all the parents are on Halloween night?
I don't think you ever have to do that in those movies. No, they do in two. They're all at, because it's the same thing. Well, you think that's weird. The abandoned hospital in two, I think, is even more strange.
The four people working at night in a hospital.
Yeah. The adults, because they talk about where Laurie's parents are, they're all at a country club party, I believe. Yeah.
Okay.
Halloween party at the country club, something like that.
It's like in Satan's Little Helper, how like all the parents have gone to that one party where,
exactly.
Yeah, where Amanda.
So there's a reference, kind of?
But well, maybe
Amanda Plummer.
But she's like, I'm dying. I've got plastic over my mouth. This isn't a Jennifer. I'm doing Jennifer Tilly.
It's a I mean, it definitely just speaks to the idea here that, again, in talking about like the ennui and the anxiety of like suburban life, that parents sort of like they don't have to raise their kids anymore because it's safe now. Life is safe, that they don't have to worry about their kids. And like, well, that's what I like about this movie, is that it reintroduces the idea that even if you've made it to the suburbs, even if you have been successful enough to live in the suburbs, things can still get crazy and weird. And I really actually dig that a lot about this film.
The suburbs have no charms to soothe the restless dreams of youth. So
thank you, Arcade Fire.
That wasn't Arcade Fire.
I know.
That was Rush.
That was Rush.
Subdivision.
Know your shit, brother.
So, but going back to
have no charms to soothe the restless dreams of you.
Of course, I don't think we've heard a lot of singing recently, have we?
I haven't done much singing.
Is your throat better? Has it been ailing you?
It is.
So as far as I think the movie moves so well though, as far as being paced, I think it's. I can understand why you would prefer maybe to watch Nightmare, but I think this movie's so much more well paced than Nightmare is. It seems to move along at a pretty quick clip. Although I do say that I do think that some of the scenes are, John Carpenter seems in this movie to be more concerned with convincing, like he seems very concerned with showing you how Michael Myers got his
everything.
Right. Like we have to, I've always found the scene where he finds the red truck and the red rabbit matches so bizarre and out of place. Like it shows that he's on the right track, but it's also, why do we have to know how he got the jumpsuit? Like that makes no sense to me at all.
But almost, I mean, it's almost like, I find it hard to believe that they'd stop at the exact same place.
Right. He'd be able to find him on this backwoods road. Like there must be only one road into and out of Haddonfield, and it's like a dead end street.
But then again, I guess
it's a dead end street.
Is it four when he runs into Michael at the after he breaks out of the ambulance, and he runs into him at the rundown truck stop, I guess it is, where he's killed everyone?
I think it is four.
Yeah, four, I'm pretty sure.
I don't remember. Like all three,
Michael,
four and five just sort of blend together. Four, five, and six even really kind of blend together.
But five, remember, begins with after he's been
shot by a machine gun,
attacking after Daniel Harris's character attacks the mom and all that, and so it's the beginning. I'm pretty sure of four where he comes back. He's there. He's burned. Loomis is. That's how he survived the hospital. Is some burns.
Yeah, the explosion. No, it was just an explosion. It wasn't an explosion. It was an explosion.
I don't remember much of the other parts of these movies. I barely remember two.
I mean, that's the detriment of the series.
Huh?
I think that's the detriment of the series is that no one really remembers the other movies that much.
I remember two. I mean, two works pretty well.
Yeah. I actually remember three the best out of all of them, even though it's not in the canon. I mean, it's not in, Michael's not in it.
Three's underrated, though. Yeah. I agree.
Well, it looks really good. The stories of why three was made, and that was he wanted to make it a serial where each story was different for every Halloween.
Like each movie was like a charm, and so you put them all together with some oats, and then it's very lucky for them. No, I agree with you. Like I don't think the series holds up that well overall because the movies get so. I don't know why this character seems to have had the hardest time. Maybe it's because of the constraints of the environment. Like there's only so many times a dude like this can walk into like a suburban environment, just hack people to pieces. And it makes sense. I kind of like the idea of like they'd continued the series where he just follows Laurie Strode wherever she goes. Like if it had gone directly from her house and babysitting to the hospital to then a mental asylum to then somewhere else that she would have gone after a mental asylum. Just every movie is like, how far is he going to follow her to try to kill her? That would have been interesting to me.
I saw a great Photoshop thing on Facebook today. It was a Michael and a walker and Jamie Lee Curtis on the couch. I was like, now that Michael can't scare the shit out of me, I eat Activia.
That's funny.
I like one. As much as anything, for that senselessness of it, like not having, like it's hard to watch it now. We know he's after Laurie because Laurie's his sister, but we don't know that until two,
right?
Yeah.
And that reveal in two is pretty interesting because like, oh, that's why he's doing this. But it's so cool up to then to think, what the hell's this guy? What's his deal? You know, it's just like
he's just a pervert. Like
at that point,
my reading of it now is just he's a pervert. Like if you look at those scenes, okay, he murders his sister. Literally moments after she's finished having sex with the obviously the worst lay in the world.
Shortest sex.
Yeah. The worst lay in the world.
At least.
So he kills her and then he kills, like even for me, even the scene with the nurse, there was something odd about that, but I'll ignore that one. But if you get to like later, obviously he pulls the headstone for Judith, his sister, who he obviously has a thing for. He definitely has a thing for his sister, but every other murder in the rest of the movie, not Annie, but what was the other
Linda?
Linda's is obviously sexual because of the strangulation and mistaking it for sex sounds. But Annie's, I had never really read as a sexual death, but in a a car with the windows fogged up is a like a definite, in any other movie would have been taking like a sexual, something's happening in this car, like don't come a knocking kind of thing. Yeah. And I think that even that one is very sexual because she makes a weird, almost, it's silly, but almost orgasmic face as she's being strangled.
Oh yeah. Well, and the noise she makes as he's, and at first I didn't really like, as her boyfriend's Paul, right? She's going to pick Paul up.
Mm-hmm. Paul. And,
even watching it now, I kept thinking, I was like, oh, well, I could see how this confused, like maybe some, it was supposed to make you think that maybe it was Paul in the back seat playing a trick on her. So maybe she didn't know that she was being, I mean, she realized she was being murdered eventually, but at the same time, she didn't know. And I had down here in my notes too, is like at the core of this movie, Michael is just a fucking creeper.
He is, because there's a scene where Linda's having sex, and they're finishing up or something, and he's in the room. Like, there's a scene of, and I know, like, the reason, it seems as though Carpenter did not intend for it to be, like, an overt, like, a reading of, like, oh, he's a sexual pervert. They just wanted to have another scene where he's sort of looming around, and we know that he's going to murder them.
Loomising
around. But the fact of the matter is that he's in a bedroom while they're having, ostensibly having sex. And, not ostensibly, literally, but, you know.
Literally
finishing.
Which one are you talking about? When they're on the couch?
No, when they're in the bed.
It is looming there, but then when we see a shadow.
In the bedroom, when the shadow like moves across the screen.
Because you get both of those.
It's hard to believe that these people are, again, these are high schoolers.
Yeah. Like, it's definitely, we grew up in a different age, it seems. Like, they were very, this was definitely very like free love 70s, like in the wake of like flower power stuff, so.
And drunk driving was both okay and
the cans, the cans crinkling out of the van.
You get in the car and the cans fall.
Well, I mean, you got to think though. I mean, this is the point at which we're establishing all those, you know, all those Scream's rules as to what can happen, even down to the point where, I mean, what is Paul's? Well, not Paul. What is
Tom. She's like, I'll be right back.
Yeah, so I'll be right back.
Tom? I didn't notice that. I saw a lot of, I picked up a lot more of the Scream, like what Scream referenced in this film this time around too, of that. So,
you guys, keep talking, like, but when her boyfriend, what, like when he goes down to get her a beer?
Yeah, and he says, I'll be right back, and does, you know, and walks out, and then she giggly laughs. I mean, that's, you know, straight out of
Don't Get Dressed.
Randy's rules, and then that's when Matthew Lillard walks backwards out of the room. Well, I'll be right back. Ooh.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Bob. Bob is.
Bob. That's like exactly. What's the matter, Bob? Can I get your ghost?
Yeah. Her
giggle. I love PJ Souls, though.
I do too. She was great in Carrie.
There.
It's. There's also sort of a lot of gender reversal here that's not what I mean, but like Bob is the one who goes to get the beers. And I know that like the intent is for him to go down and get murdered in this very specific kind of way, but it's kind of neat that she's not the one doing the serving. Like, she's not the one going to get the beers. He is. And it's kind of interesting the way the gender politics play in this. And it shows Deborah Hill's influence on the script. And I do love the dialogue and the writing at certain parts of
one of the greatest things is the girls dialogue with each other.
I think sometimes the Donald Pleasant stuff is like, it's pleasantly hokey, but it's still very like second-rate crime novel kind of stuff.
It's also like
the evil is gone.
He's gone from here.
You've mentioned, and Drew, you have commented that he didn't know what he was doing at the time, but it is almost like he's in a different. It's like
it's like he's in a different movie.
It's like listening to the commentary on the DVD of Seven, where Morgan Freeman is not with David Fincher and Brad Pitt. Uh-huh. So it's like everything Brad Pitt and David Fincher are joking about, it'll then cut to Morgan Freeman saying something completely different about the scene. That's what I got the idea that Loomis was doing too. It's like. The guy is batshit crazy.
The sequence in the car where we really get to first establish him, and she's asking him all the questions like, you really don't want him to get out? Never. Yeah. And it's just all the things he says, you know, that Thorazine, he'll barely be able to stand up. That's the idea.
It's like, you know, and then the scene when they
it
come.
It is the law.
Or whatever, whenever she says, do you want to refer to it as him? What does he say? Whatever you say.
If you say so.
I love it. I sort of love his apathy in the beginning. Like, I almost wish we had gotten his sort of like apathetic mission. Like he has just gone from he does play it like someone who had dealt with this monster for 15 years, and it's like it's like an apathetic mission. Like it's like finding the Grail. He has to do it. It's his job. He can't help but do it. But at this point, he's bored with it. And then he goes like, and immediately as he realizes Michael's gone, like a switch turns, and it's amazing. Like the moment that the evil's gone, he's gone from here. Love
That's
it.
What she said when she's like pulling up, and she's like, "Do you want to go on, move?
The evil's gone from here."
I mean, it is. I mean, you can tell. Cause, I mean, he's just very. You know, it's what we've got to do when he's in the car, and then all of a sudden he sees that the music kicks in, and he goes running over to the gate, and he's like, "Shit."
Yeah.
But it's also the moment he's been waiting for. He's like, he knows it's coming. He said it. He said, you know, watched this guy for 15 years. I tried to help him for 8, for 9.
Yeah, he's like, he stared out that wall.
Yeah, looking through the wall
all this day. Yeah. But the that scene where they come up onto the
devil's eyes,
the insane asylum, and that always freaked me out. All those crazy people just walking around outside as the rain came, like the rain pours. I'm like, God damn, that's creepy to watch.
It also is weird how uninterested everyone in a place of authority is, though. Like Brian, you say that it's like a leap of faith, but I also think like if all these people escaped. Or they were wandering around, and this one guy escapes. Someone who we know for a fact murdered his sister just
one
up and leaves.
12 years ago, or 18 years ago.
15 years ago.
15 years ago.
Man.
Still, though, that would create chaos. Like, that's still a huge event that a person who murdered someone else forcibly, like, do we know how they got where they was? Was that Michael's doing? Do we ever know that? That's something I meant to follow up on. Like, do we know?
It's one that I've always assumed. It's one I've always assumed. Yeah.
I mean, well,
that's
if we watch the Rob Zombie one, then yes.
But we're not.
Yeah.
We're not counting that as canon.
Well, it's not canon here.
It's canon here.
It doesn't make sense. I mean, I still argue. I think one of the biggest weaknesses that version of Halloween has is Malcolm McDowell's Loomis isn't right.
He's it's too like, concerned.
Well, but he's also just too Malcolm McDowell. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, the thing about Loomis in this one is, I mean, the very idea that he is Donald Pleasance is a different thing. Like Malcolm McDowell already brings with him some such baggage as as an actor that you're already like, I'm not sure this is the guy I'm going to that I would trust to do this. He's not the guy I'm like I'm behind for this.
The McDowellian school of acting.
But I don't know. Yeah, I assume Michael did that. Yes, and you're right. When Loomis is having the conversation with Dr. Wynn, I think it is of Smith's Grove Sanitarium when they're leaving, everyone's always trying to make excuses to Loomis and make it his fault.
Yeah.
That's the one thing I love is how everyone's trying to pawn this off on Loomis, who is the only person who during any of this has sit there and said this is what we need to do. And someone else doesn't do it, and then they try and throw it back on him. It's like, well, you should have. I've told everyone. You know.
So what you're saying is the real monster of this movie is bureaucracy.
Essentially.
Yeah.
They just let Loomis do what he wanted to do to Michael from the get go, which I'm sure is, you know, lobotomizing maybe.
I think like really one of the big problems with these early slasher movies is that they have sort of an illogical error about them when it comes to what are the killers doing in the hours between murders. Like this is the most prominent example. I think we talked about it with A Nightmare on Elm Street as well. Like what does Freddy do? Well, he walks around and cuts his fingers off to scare people. Like that's part of what he does. But what does he do in the other hours? Here we have a lot of scenes of Michael just sort of like driving around, and it's both hilarious and unintentionally hilarious at times, because Carpenter, as much as he wants us to know how Michael got his jumpsuit, he also wants us to know what Michael's doing in the hours leading up to the murder. It's like they have to know where he is at all times.
I thought to myself, I'd like to see the found footage of like if Michael was carrying around a GoPro now of like, how he got out of people's ways when they came to find him after they saw him, like, oh shit, he's over there in the bushes. And then the scene of him running like at top speed away to hide from them.
I was like, especially in the backyard when he's behind the clothes and then he's not. So he essentially just dives into the bushes when he's
like, she saw me. Lay still, Michael. Lay still. Shh, 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 shh.
Like, what is Michael thinking in those scenes? Like, what's going on? Like, that would be a funny short. But what is driving him to follow? Like, I don't know. It's just so weird that he's following around Laurie Strode, but then just like diving out of the way anytime she comes close. He's a bad stalker. He's wearing a mask, and no one. That's one of the things that Kate brought up was. How is no one calling this person on? Like, someone would have called the cops at some point with a guy driving around during the day wearing a mask. Or is this just Halloween the naive 70s?
Yeah, Halloween
the naive 70s. Yeah.
I think that's the thing where this movie doesn't need to be it doesn't need to be watched, at least his character. And I never watch him as that, as a real, you know, this crazed murderer going around and doing this. As much as that, I think that's why they build him up so much in the dialogue to be this just pure embodiment of evil. So when he disappears from the laundry, it's because he fucking disappears.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, people don't notice him because, I mean, he's there, but he's not there.
I love that idea.
He is this just pure force of just driven force of pure evil kind of deal. And that's where I've always gone with it and just never, sat down and thought about the silliness of it in being a regular person kind of deal, going around and doing this.
It seems like it was easier to be evil in the 70s too. Like, it didn't take much to be evil.
What do you mean? Talk a little bit about that. What do you mean?
So the idea that he is, like I said, he killed his sister. Right. He killed one person, sent to the insane asylum. That, and then we're all basing our idea of how crazy and soulless this guy is on Donald Pleasance's description.
I put more faith in him as a narrator than you do, apparently.
Maybe that's probably what it is, then. I just keep thinking that if I was a cop in that town, I would think Donald Pleasance was out of his fucking mind. Like, this old fucker is over here just, I got all sorts of shit to deal with. I got these kids running around, bashing pumpkins and breaking into hardware stores, stealing masks. And this guy comes to me from another part of the state telling me that this guy got out of the insane asylum who killed his sister 15 years ago, and now he's going to come back and wreak havoc on my town.
And again, to me, that speaks to the banality of evil. Like, evil is the, and like, the bureaucracy of evil as well. Like, We have a convicted murderer on the loose, and I have to worry about kids breaking into hardware stores, like, which is also literally Michael and not the kids breaking into the hardware store.
That's the thing I wonder now. I've always thought it was Michael, but I don't know that it is now. I think it might be kids. I think it might be the kids later. Like, we see kids later with masks and things like that, because it I've always thought it was Michael, but it makes no sense now. He already had his mask. We've already seen that.
Yeah, that's the other part that confused me too, is that, and I got confused because I kept thinking of the Rob Zombie's Halloween where they show Michael break into the hardware store to get the stuff, and so it was in my mind. I thought, oh, that scene must be in the original as well, but it's not. Yeah. So we just assume that that's Michael that does that to go get the mask, right. But
and the rope and the knives, but watching it last night, I mean, part of me just started to assume it's like, Michael's already got that. He's already been driving around. Why? Either that alarm has just been going off. Either the alarm's been going off for a long time.
Right.
Terrible cops.
Right.
Or the alarm has just been going off because it actually is unconnected. It's not part of the main narrative. It's just something else that's happening.
And also, too, when he jumps over the station wagon and then takes over the car, I was like, how does this guy know how to drive? It's addressed like a couple of scenes later. I was like, certainly. Oh, well, I guess.
With just a throwaway line. Last night. I also think the sound effect at that point is my least favorite moment in the film. Like, overall, that's my least favorite moment in the film, when he leaps. The
Spider-Man
weird
man from the 70s.
Yeah, like, just the scene, the way it shot and the shot and the sound effect itself is just really bizarre.
Hang on, Kylo. Let me hook up my sound effects.
Oh, please do. That's exactly what we need on this podcast.
I think the saddest moment in the entire franchise, and not sad as in like bad, I mean like literally sad, is when Loomis is looking one way and the car drives by and he looks the other way and he misses it, and it's like, all of those people could have lived. it's the most tragic little moment there. It's like, if you had just turned around and looked at the street, you would have seen the car and all this is over.
It's also the most hilarious moment in the entire movie. Like, it's also so funny to me when I see it now. I'm just like, that is hilarious.
You missed your chance.
You missed
the,
it.
Does Michael know? That's my question, too. Does he even realize? Because I like to think, go back to the short we're talking about. Now, he's just like, just giggling up a storm. Right. At the fact that, oh, look, he's right there, and he missed me.
Like, he obviously has like, a sense of humor.
You get when you, like, you pull something off, you're like, oh, my God, I got away with it.
Well, I like to think he's also, if anything, probably still a six-year-old in, mentally, like, an adult body at that point as well. And, I mean, yeah. I think that's kind of where he's stuck as well in this, you know, this endless loop of, you know, of whatever this childish, it's evil now, but this childish morality that he feels he has to be some sort of angel, right, of death for, you know, ensuring that, you know, the purity of these women or exists or whatever it is.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's so bizarre. Like that. I think that's what makes this
druidness of him. Of course, we learn later.
God, I think that's why the sexual angle is so unsettling now, is because I think it does exist. Like, he's a druid sex maniac, which is the band we should start.
Right. He's a druish sex maniac, as they would say in Spaceballs.
The amount of time that's spent with a parent staring at him as the camera pulls away.
I love it. I like to think that they're like, I like to always think that they just frozen in like a, you know, it's like the end of a play. But then you see the mom move. But yeah, they're so still.
And she's, if you pay attention to her, she's making like a face like, oh, Michael again. Yeah. Like the,
you're doing this again.
He's killed something before.
Oh, sure. I mean, their house is littered. The underneath of their house, the crawl space is littered with animals and stuff that he has murdered.
That's also like that weird tableau at that moment, I think, is also one of the weaker moments, like one of the more laughable moments in the movie now. But I think that Carpenter kind of knew that, like he was exposing this moment, like having it soak in. So again, like realistically, that doesn't work as a moment because no one would just stand there that way, especially if a kid's holding a bloody knife.
Michael.
But it still works. Like, to me, I still like that shot. I know that Carpenter was just like, just stand there. We're gonna pull back. We got this crane shot.
Yeah.
But
got a crane to use. So let's use it.
Yeah, we
rented it.
Today. Let's just use it.
Like, I would have just been like, hey, go and take him inside. We're gonna pull back. Take him inside. Just go. I don't know,
at least have a parent scream at the bloodiness.
Well, you'd think that, I mean, what
the dad run
what
in.
What we'd see now is someone would run in, someone would be like, Michael, what happened? And that, you know, and someone would run in, and then they'd see the, you know, the daughter, and you'd hear that scream or something, and then it'd probably go.
Or,
and then we'd go to black, having zoomed back in on Michael's blank face.
Or
the mom is a stripper, and she comes to visit him every day in the. No.
I would say
I'm gonna check out that movie.
My hypothesis about that moment though is that what Carpenter means to convey is that we spend the entire first scene entirely from Michael's perspective when the mask is taken off. For Michael, that is a moment which has frozen in time for 15 years. And like I think that that's what Carpenter was going for there, and it sort of plays silly, but I think
I love it. Actually.
That's what I take from it is this is a moment in time that he has been contemplating and thinking about in sort of like suspension for the last 15 years.
He's been looking at the wall, looking through the wall.
Looking through the wall.
And that's what he's been seeing is that moment, like that moment of getting caught or something. Like I don't know.
Well, that's where I was stopped. I think that's where he's starting from again.
Yeah.
With Halloween
work to do.
You know, it was a Halloween years ago, and I've still got to do this. I've got another sister out there. Interestingly enough, though, she's not having sex. So why is he so worried about her?
Yeah, really. She is not. She's the only one who's not having sex.
Who doesn't even want to. Like, she even gets a date, and then she gets like all, don't know. Call him back. No.
I was born with both pieces of genitalia.
Poor Ben Tramer, of course.
Ben Tramer, yeah.
As we learn, he dies in two.
There's also some weird sex. Like, there's also something weirdly sexualized. Sexual, like, rolled up into that because he's killed because he's wearing the very same mask that Michael is wearing when he gets killed. So there's something there. Carpenter definitely has like an interesting take on the Michael psyche that he's never really discussed at great length. But there's a lot there. It has like the Hemingway 9/10 thing where just a little bit's above the surface and there's so much below the surface.
I watched the film. I had the 35th anniversary Blu-ray. I watched it with the commentary on. So ask me any question. I know exactly the answer.
Okay. What was he thinking?
Yeah, it's nice.
He was thinking that, man, is this payday going to be sweet?
God. So have you watched the 35th anniversary with the commentary at all?
No.
Of course not.
I've watched the commentary that's on my Anchor Bay DVD. The first one they released.
I think so, yeah. I have the 25th.
This one's a new recording. So he's had some more time to think
about.
Yeah.
I had the 25th anniversary DVD, but I probably accidentally sold it like a moron.
Well, remember they didn't. It took a while before they did that commentary. That commentary is one of the reasons I bought. I think the last version that I did buy of it was the commentary, because I think I had to buy one version to get the TV version of the movie, and then I bought another version to get the commentary. And it's like,
well, you know, they so Scream Factory released the box set.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost bought it, but then I thought to myself, like this, what I talked about earlier, like I'm not that big of a fan of this series.
No.
To have bought this box set, I bought the.
I still want it.
It would be great to have as a collection.
I mean, I've got Nightmare and I've got Halloween. I mean,
sure.
I mean, I've got Nightmare and Friday the 13th, which that's not a series. I mean, I still watch those occasionally. I'll pick one out, and, you know, say, oh, let's watch something that's not Seven.
Right.
The apparently there's a problem with like disc Halloween 4 from that set that they're having to replace.
I knew they were replacing one.
Replacing a disc that was messed up.
If there's one to replace, it's that one.
What I like to think is it took a while to figure that out because no one got to 4
for a while. Right. It'd be 3 years before everyone just realized, like, oh, hang on a second.
Wait, no. Something's wrong with, I like it, the idea, wait, something's wrong with Rob Zombie's Halloween 2? Oh, I never watched it, so it wouldn't help.
I've never seen the second.
I saw it in the theater, and I was more or less by myself in that on opening day.
Pretty empty. I had a bad speaker, and it made the experience really...
Like the person who was standing up front talking was...
They were like, I wish.
In this, it was
a narrator, like, okay, in this scene, Malcolm McDowell is
still
alive.
I think it's a high school motivational speaker.
Yeah.
Right.
That's up there going, Satan?
No, I wish. But, I mean, it's even grimier and dirtier and grungier than his first one. I mean, that's really what it's just really.
And like less connected to reality. Less connected to reality.
Just disgustingness. It's like,
well, now I want to see it.
I mean, it's definitely worth a viewing.
It's provocative, sure. But it's not coherent.
Like, right. And, yeah.
Well, that what you just
he
said
didn't
goes.
Want to make it though, right? I mean, right, if I recall, no. He didn't want to make it.
Yeah, he didn't want to make it, but they were like, make another one. He's like, I want to make the movie I want to make, and they were like, okay, fine. And then he just went out and made this bizarre ass movie. I kind of like that balls where he's like, I'm just gonna make the movie
make
I want
to do
make.
It. Yeah.
I like to think Rob Zombie's career has all been based upon fuck it.
Nah, fuck it.
Yeah.
Will he deign to like? Placate the studio, or will he just do what he wants?
Oh, well, I remember in watching his interviews when he did House of a Thousand Corpses, one of his things was like, you know, I watched this movie and I thought, God, that sucks. I can make a movie that sucks just as much as that one and probably get it out.
Yeah, I mean.
Have you ever heard, have you ever listened to, go off on a sad tangent here, Chris Hardwick talk about House of a Thousand Corpses?
A little bit. I mean, from the podcast.
He says like, so up until the very end, they had no money. Like, Rob Zombie had no money. And then all of a sudden, the studio watched what he'd made and was like, oh, here's a bunch of money. So that's why the movie changes so drastically at the end, because all of a sudden he had a ton of money to do stuff with.
God, I wish they hadn't given him the money so they didn't do like the bunny hunting scene at the end and had just ended it with some violent murder and just like credits.
Which he made up for in House of a Thousand Corpses.
Devil's Rejects.
Devil's Rejects. I'm sorry.
Which I loved. Devil's Rejects is probably his most interesting film.
Sure.
Oh, certainly. Certainly.
I actually really liked Lords of Salem, but I think Devil's Rejects is still the most interesting of all his films.
I think Lords of Salem is the movie he's always wanted to make.
Yeah.
But Devil's Rejects is a good redemption from House of a Thousand Corpses with that same family.
Yeah. Great character. Like, interesting characters. I'm interested to see what 31's going to be. So
I am too. So I hopefully he's not become just an old curmudgeon, which he sounds like on his AMAs. So
what's your favorite kill in this movie? Is the Bob kill or
I like Bob when he sticks him to the wall.
But it's dumb. The knife isn't nearly as big. I mean, that knife is like sticking so far out of his body, and then especially going through his body and into the door to hold him up. It's like that thing has to be a machete to do that, and it's not.
That's how strong Michael is.
Like when he kills Lester.
Oh no, asshole!
The idea that all he really takes is if you can catch Michael off guard, you can pretty much. Yeah. Win, because Lori did not. All she did was like kind of stick him in the eye with stuck him with the much crocheting needle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then he kept coming at her, and she stuck him in the eye with the...
She's got some great aim with some really... Oh,
I always doubted that the clothes hanger, the...
To the eye?
To the eye. I was like, that had to have been an amazing shot. He has a mask on, and the clothes hanger has to... I mean, you know, if you've ever tried to unlock a car door with a clothes hanger, they do not stay in that position.
They waver.
Yeah.
What's weird though is like that moment from the film where she's hiding in the closet. Even before I watched the movie, my mom talked about it. She talked about like that was the scariest thing she had ever seen. She was like that when she saw that movie in the theater. She said that was one of the most terrifying moments she had ever experienced in film. And so that it had a lot. It held a lot of like
the closet,
where she's hiding in the closet. And he's like beating the closet door in and
the louvered closet.
I like that. He's like, come on, Michael. You could do better with this closet.
Yeah. Just rip the door off the hinge.
Well, you know, he was going to remodel it. So I think he could do better as well. But, he just wanted to change the doors. He should have totally gone for, he needed to put in, an installation so he could have
the more closet. The doors are so 1974.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that all those things that go back to that whole idea of where they built him up as this embodiment of evil and that he just can't be stopped. I mean, she keeps on doing these things that should stop him. And it seems ludicrous that this guy should be dead by now. Now, but he's not, and he just keeps coming. Especially, and it comes down to what ends up being probably one of my favorite shots is I don't know how Nick Castle sat up like that, but man, that's such a great.
Yeah,
the rumor, I mean, and that was ad-libbed as well. Like that was not in the script, and Carpenter did not give him the direction. That was all Nick Castle.
And when he looks over too, I mean, it's fantastic. There just aren't great kills in this though. I don't have a favorite kill. It's not a movie about not a movie about kills as much as I guess it is about scares. They're favorite scares. I love anything that happens during the day at the beginning. That's my favorite stuff. Anytime Michael, when he's standing behind the car, when he's standing in her backyard, when he's in front, when he's on the sidewalk in front of the bush and then steps back out of the way, anything he does that makes you question, wait, did I see him there? Is he here? Because during high school, we were looking for him in other shots, and they're thinking, wait, he's got to be in somewhere else. Let's see, is he here?
I love when she yells at him and he hits the brakes on that car.
Yeah.
Like, at what point? And she's
he wasn't even going that fast.
No, he wasn't. But then at the same time, it was like, was he going to hit reverse and go back and say, who the fuck are you talking to?
That would have been awesome.
We did that one time. We were outside the front of my house. It was late at night one time. This guy comes zooming down the road, and of course, we had to yell that out. And obviously, and he put his brakes on that, and we're like, oh, fuck.
Once in high school, it was during the 1993 blizzard in Tennessee. We were in the blizzard of 93. Coming back from work, my buddy and I, Eric, we were in his Mustang, and he loved this car. He's always been in love with his cars. So as we go by, these kids throw these snowballs, and of course he, yanks the emergency brake, and he spins his car around. These kids start running, and we it was like a horror movie. We were chastening them through the woods to catch them, and they're crying and stuff like that. We eventually gave up the chase, but at the same time, I was like, I got caught up in the moment. I was like, yeah, how dare you throw a piece of packed ice at this car?
Right.
Mob mentality.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I'd totally be part of
that's how I almost got shot by a redneck who was afraid that we were trying to murder his dogs. That also happened. That happened to me in high school. I almost got shot by someone who thought I was trying to steal his hunting dogs.
I was once we had these in middle school. This group of kids would come by. The high schoolers would come by in their car and spray us with water guns at the bus stop.
Right.
So the next day, we thought it'd be funny to fill balloons with piss and eggs. Oh. And as they came around the corner and did it again, we nailed their car with eggs and piss-filled balloons. And for some reason, we got in trouble for that.
Of course you did. Yeah, that's how it always works.
And I kept saying, but they kept spraying us. But yeah, but this, and this. And I was like, well, I didn't know what was in those guns.
Yeah,
I didn't get in trouble. I talked my way out of it.
But I mean, I agree. That always seems to be the weird thing that happens. I have sympathy for you in that point. Like, I love how we talk about this thing about how bad bullying is, but we really do, we take the power away from the victim to do anything because then it's well, now you're just resorting there. No, they were shooting us with water guns. Why can we not get some sort of revenge? I don't know. Never understood that. It's not exactly bullying there.
No, it's pranks, but no. Yeah. The idea of the car stopping and, coming back and yelling at us and stuff like that. That's what I always imagine. Like, as soon as Michael hit those brakes, he's thinking in his mind, he was like, oh shit, I can't go say anything to him.
That follows up two of the best lines in the movie, too. And that's where she sits there and she says, what are you going to do about, something like, shit, I've got somewhere to do that.
Yeah.
And that's also then when you have Linda just going on about her books. Well, I always leave my books. I leave my chemistry book. I leave my biology book. I leave my – it's just some great dialogue. Probably my favorite run of dialogue in the movie is that walk home right there, which I think is very Deborah Hill. I think she did have a lot to do with that.
Well, she did most of the script, and then Carpenter did a run through to add all the creepy stuff. But my favorite shot in the movie is the famed where she's hiding. She has found the bodies. Laurie has, and his face appears in the dark. Globe. That's my favorite. That's my favorite shot in the movie. That's just such an interesting and like. It is an inventive and creative shot. Like nothing was done there except the shining of a flashlight, basically. And that was with a dimmer switch. And that was awesome.
We, and another thing something we did in college, we had to do a haunted house in the dorm I was in. And I had a Michael mask. And so we had to set up one room and we did the doorway completely in black. And then I wore a black outfit and would, stand kind of outside of the doorway with the mask on and then slowly step forward.
That's awesome.
The best way we could do that, that slow reveal of the mask there.
I thought you were going to tell me that it was, you would just pop up like that, like the dude beside the bed. And like you had the best core, like strength of all time at that point from just doing that over and over and over again.
My favorite weird Michael appearance from anywhere is when they run across the road. At one point, I think Annie's taking Lindsay across the road. And he pops up from behind the car, like, what's he doing? Changing a tire? I mean, what is it? I don't know what he's doing.
He's just there. I mean, it just shows how no one had a blueprint or a map to make a slasher movie at this point. It's just like, here are all the scary moments in this movie. Here are all the scary moments that could possibly be in here.
But so many things try and do that later, and that's the thing. And it doesn't work like it works here. And that's the thing. There's so many things later that are just strung together scary moments. I mean, that's what every Friday the 13th after that is strung together scary moment with some effects for for an ingenious kill kind of deal.
Yeah. Well,
but maybe the thing about Michael and the first Halloween that makes it creepy is almost that. I mean, we get the idea that he is this soulless person that has come back. We don't know he's Laurie's brother, but the whole idea of like how what the strangers is creepy is it at this time we don't know why he's back to kill. He's just there to kill indiscriminately, and we don't know what his motivation is besides that he's evil.
But I mean, I like even from there, like I almost wish, and I'm pretty sure this is where he originally wanted to go with it. That I mean, we don't know the sister thing. I'm sure Carpenter. I mean, he hadn't planned that out until 2. And why does Michael choose her? Because she shows up at the door that day. She's the one who drops off the key.
Oh, right. And that's it. That's right. At the Myers house.
And that's what starts it. He's come back to town. He's in the house. Who knows? He might have, like Loomis thought he was going to come back to the house. Maybe that's where he's going to stay the whole time. But what happens? She comes to the door and she drops it off. And he looks at her and is like, oh, wait, that's my sister. Not his real sister. He just sees like a stand-in, a proxy for his sister from years ago.
Right.
And he's back on. He's just turned back on again kind of deal.
That's such a weird coincidence. And then he circles back around to that idea in the second movie that, oh, that's actually his sister.
Right.
That's so bizarre.
But I think about 2, you had to come up with a reason, because why is he still... I mean, I think in 2, if he's still doing it, it does become almost forced and weird. He might as well just move on to somebody the hell else at that point. Yeah.
Do you think he would have murdered the children as well?
No, I don't. I never have.
I wonder.
No, that doesn't... Yeah, because that doesn't seem like... I mean, well, technically, they're high schoolers. They are children, too, but...
They're not innocent. That's the difference.
Yeah.
I don't think he would have...
Laurie was innocent.
Right, now, and I wonder if ultimately he doesn't kill her.
But, she smokes pot. She's not that innocent.
Oh,
she does that.
When I was in high school, I thought it was a cigarette that they were smoking, because Annie holds it like a regular cigarette, and so I always thought like, oh, they're getting in trouble for smoking. What a high school thing to do.
I didn't realize that at all either.
I've lost it.
We're still, I mean, back at the end where I also wonder, like, things that I wonder would it get by nowadays. I don't think they would allow then we rip Lindsay's clothes off. I don't think you get,
you do not get away with that line in 2014. Like that stood out to me. I was like, whoa, Bob, that is weird as shit.
Pretty molesty, dude.
Yeah. And I love that he's wearing glasses in the movie just for the scare later. That's kind of interesting that like his glasses are used for function in this movie as a prop.
They're the worst glasses. And then all I kept thinking, I was like, well, did he have any other choices? Because
it was the '70s.
Yeah. I mean, those were the worst glasses ever.
I think they were stylish in the '70s. Do you not think so?
My first pair of glasses looked like that and they were horrible.
Yeah.
It was like 1984 though.
Yeah.
So. Another thing that I just want some clarification on, just to see that. So when Brackett and Loomis first show up to the house and they walk inside and they find the dead animal, and Loomis is in there saying, yeah,
he was hungry.
Yeah, he got hungry. And then he's like, could have been a skunk. What could have been a skunk? The dead animal or the skunk killed this animal? What does he think happened?
This is my area of expertise. Skunks are notoriously cannibalistic and they will kill a lot of things.
No,
I just made that up.
No, I believe them being scavengers, but that would mean like it comes in. So the skunk comes into this house and finds a dead animal that's already there and eats it. Like, I just never understood that. I was like, what does he think could have been the skunk? I never got that one. And I also love.
I do so enjoy your Loomis though. It is pretty.
Yeah.
It's very well practiced and it's perfect.
10 years. One of my biggest disappointments here in Athens is I saw they did a live read through one time of Halloween. It was awesome. I mean, I just saw it the night of, and I was like, oh, man, I want to go see that, and drove down there. Like, there's a big, huge crowd in the lobby of the Cine waiting to go in there, and I just kind of slid into the middle and was able to get a ticket and slide in. And I was like, yeah, all right. And went inside, and the guy they had reading Loomis just didn't – like, he did his own reading, but it wasn't Loomis.
There was no gravitas.
No, none at all. It was like, dude, you can't do Loomis like that. That was just...
Did you get up and yell, you're pulling me out of it?
No, it's still a pretty cool idea. It was just really cool to see the live read-through. They did a great job. I mean, it was fantastically done. I was kind of jealous. I was like, I wish I could have done that. I think I could have.
How do you think the movie would have been...
Imagine you putting on a bald cap and a trench coat, too.
Of course, yeah. In character.
How do you think the movie would have been different if Christopher Lee had gotten the role of Loomis?
I think it'd be fine. I just think there's still just something about
Loomis is so. It's like I said. He's so disconnected from what's going on in the rest of the film that I don't think it would have mattered because he never really comes into contact with the three girls and what's going on with their lives until the very end.
What's the boogeyman? As a matter of fact, it was.
Yeah. Or and like the. When Rob Zombie's cover of I'm Your Boogeyman and the whole kid's like, he's going to get you. He's going to get you. Yeah. Like, oh, okay. Now I've completely forgot that it was from this movie.
Yeah. It's some of the scenes are so like arch and obvious. I mean, the sort of back and forth is very like stagey with the kids and Tommy at that point where they're like, he's like, you could tell these kids hadn't really done a lot of acting. Maybe Tommy had, cause he seemed like more at home, but the other kids seemed to like wait for their moment. And then they all start like, he's going to get you. And then they stop and they wait for Tommy. Tommy delivers line. Kids deliver line. Tommy delivers line. Like they turn off and they turn on to do their line and they turn off again. It's just very like you can definitely tell that they hadn't done a lot of acting at that point.
I just wish someone had told Tommy that he'd grow up to be Paul Rudd. I think his life would be a lot easier.
He'd have been like, things will work out. Things will work out. And
Tommy actually... Tommy actually had the worst of it when he saw Michael every single time something bad was happening.
He got no respite. Yeah, he got no respite. Like there was nothing for him to.
Well, this movie brought me back to. I mean, every film we watched, we've thought. I mean, I thought about that. It's like, oh, what if it had cell phones? This couldn't happen. But like the idea of like being over someone else's house and having to give out that number to get a phone call oh my god, what if her parents answer? Oh god.
Speaking of teenagers not caring, and when they took the phone off the hook too, that one really bothers
that
me as well.
And like, I mean, they're banging in the parents' bedroom.
Yeah, gross. That's such a gross idea. Well, that also happens in A Nightmare on Elm Street because
true, right?
Rob Jesus says Rob. Like, you guys, we're gonna take the parents' bed. You can have the rest of the house.
And maybe I can remember maybe in high school thinking that, oh my god, if my parents go out of town, I'm totally. Of course, this never happened.
Gross! So gross!
Oh god! And just
to befoul your parents.
No, wait a minute. Not just to defile your parents' bed, but the fact that maybe your parents defiled it before they left
many,
and didn't
many
change
times.
The sheets. Oh my god almighty. That has to be a high school mentality of thinking that any sex stuff could happen in your parents' bed.
Like, I guess it's the idea that it's a large bed, and all of these other the beds that you're supposed
They're
to have
like
are
twin
small.
Beds.
You get so much movement going on.
I'm gonna
last exactly 25 seconds.
I'm stuck on Christopher Lee, and I'm thinking about some of those others that I read as in the trivia just a minute ago. There's so many others that
the evil's gone from here.
I mean, he would have been good. Who were some of the others? I saw Yul Brynner, I think.
That's kind of hilarious.
Ian McKellen,
etc. No,
Ian McKellen was up for it.
I don't think he was. I'm pretty sure. No,
Michael, you shall not pass.
Considered Peter O'Toole, Mel Brooks. I'm trying to think of that. Walter Matthau.
What
the hell's Michael?
I could see Walter Matthau just being miserable son of a bitch in that, though.
Jerry Van Dyke. I'm just trying to imagine that. Kirk Douglas.
Interesting.
John Belushi. These are all, it says you're considered. So this is where they're all sitting around. Hey, who should we get for this role?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. This is like us going, who would we cast in this movie?
Lloyd Bridges. Chris Christopherson.
Whoa, that would have been interesting.
Yeah. I like to think it's Lloyd Bridges in his Seinfeld role, too, as the old man who wants to work out all the time.
David Carradine, Dennis Hopper, and then some other guys that I know.
Chris Christopherson would have been really interesting.
But no, was George C. Scott on there?
No.
That would also be cool.
Been too big, maybe, at that point still. I just think that the movie would lose something there, because I think part of its mystique comes from Donald Pleasance and his weird mystique that he has. Like he's a respected actor who has a career that ends up being in a lot of shitty movies. I mean, he's in Puma Man, for God's sake.
Right.
Puma Man. Is
Puma Man the
Oh, it's so great. It's a great
prequel to the
Sunster.
Black Panther?
Nah.
Oh.
Sequel to the Pink Panther.
Oh, gotcha.
But I just think that adds to his, you know, that mystique that he does have there as well. And I think he adds to it too. And I mean, there's just I can't even imagine, nor do I want to imagine anyone else.
Yeah. I mean, he's just so specific to this role at this point. Yeah. Like, there's no one else who could have done it.
And even though he seems like he's in a different movie, he's still one of my favorite. He's still probably my favorite part of the film.
Oh, so
this
great.
Get your ass away from that door,
honey. And what got me now?
The look on his face after is what it is, because he gets a little
smile,
like oh, it's the most fun he had all night.
Yeah, not just that, but then my sister and I used
and then
to always
get scared. I think from the sheriff right
that's
after that.
The best part is that he scares these kids and immediately gets the shit scared out of him right afterwards. Yeah. That's the best part. That's the he has that little smile on his face and all of a sudden it's, oh fuck.
And that's where the sheriff also sits there and calls him the fuck out and blames him for everything. And if it is true, then damn you for letting him out. That's when I just want to sit there and say, God, poor Loomis. He didn't let him out. He's the one person who tried to not let him out.
It's
Do you think nowadays that instead of transporting high risk mental patients to court cases so they can be tried. In station wagons, they just now have a Skype call. They just like, oh, yeah, he's fucked up. Don't bring him. Don't bring him here.
He's still crazy.
I'd really like to talk to someone who was like a teenager or someone a little bit older during this time period to see what the allure was. Brian, you were 30 when this came out. I wonder what someone who was like of age would think, like, what was the allure of this movie at the time? Because we are cinephiles who just really admired this movie, and it does hold up. Like, there are some things people who are not fans of horror movies watch this, like my girlfriend specifically, was just like, some of those movies great and scary. She admitted some of it was really scary, but she said some of it was also silly as shit. So I wonder, like, I know that at the time no one knew. Like, everyone was like, oh, this is just scary. Like, people, no one was like, oh, this is silly. But I wonder what the draw was at the time. Like, I would love to hear people's reactions. The way that, like, there's that short news story about The Exorcist and people falling out, like, oh, I had to leave. And I would love to see something about that, a collection of reactions about the original Halloween.
I just think there was just nothing like it.
My mom was 25 at the time. I'll call her.
You should ask her. All right, call her right now. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. But I would just imagine.
Yeah, here's how the conversation would go. Yeah, everything's fine. No, I'm sorry. I'm calling so late. Hey, no, Jackson's fine. It's fine. Can you just... All right, me too. Bye. That's the conversation would go.
No, it's fine. I'll call you later. No, it's okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I just imagine that. Yeah, I mean, just it's just the lack of anything like it. And that's still the problem we have with it. Like, even me watching the other day, I wasn't bored, but I'd seen it
so many times.
And so I would do other stuff. But I mean, I wouldn't pay super close attention to every scene because I mean, hell, I could sit there and tell you what was going on. I could walk out of the room and tell you what was going on while it was going on.
At one point, I did do that and walk out, and I was quoting it as it was going on in the other room. But you know, too, is I mentioned this to Drew earlier, is that I was looking for a good movie to show Jackson on Halloween night, and I was like, this movie's R, but it's not as
it's a soft R by today's standards.
And the murders aren't even that gory or violent. I mean,
they're not gory.
He won't draw the same conclusions I did about like the weird sexualized violence.
No, and
he might say boob though.
We've decided that I don't care if the kid sees boobs, but the but the idea, like what was decided on to let him watch on Halloween night was Signs. It's like Signs scared the shit out of me.
Signs was terrifying.
Yeah. So then when I was like, well, why don't we show him that? And Nicole was like, no. I was like, all right, fine. I'm not home that night. You deal with him that evening for Signs. Because when that fucking alien walks in that home video across, fuck
nope.
You.
Nope.
I screamed in the theater during that.
I did too.
Joaquin Phoenix in that movie. I screamed as well.
I was on edge the entire time I watched. That movie has such a great, like, people shit on him as a director, but that movie was, the mood and of that movie is just so unsettling. I remember clenching my fist the entire time. Like, this movie's terrifying.
I mean, that was his peak. I mean, while Sixth Sense is probably still his best, I mean, I guess arguably, I still really like Unbreakable. Signs was his peak.
Those three movies are really fantastic. And, like, and whatever he's done since then, whatever.
If you took out the whole idea of it having to be coincidence that his wife said those things,
and
that's what would have done, for them just to discover that the alien was, you know, what they were, what would hurt them, it's a great film.
Yeah.
A dumbass planet to come to, though, if that's what hurts.
Yeah. 75% water. Let's show up. Let's do this, aliens.
Well, I mean, it's like religion. Like, you have this entire planet, and you decide to populate human beings in a desert that doesn't bear much fruit or food. That's where you're going to start humanity, guy? Okay. All right. Yeah, sure. I'll follow. Mm-hmm. 40 years in the desert. Yeah. Anyway. Halloween. Oh,
Halloween.
Cut
still
to
awesome,
cut though. To 2014. We're still talking about it.
I know. So what's? I mean, is there anything else that we haven't covered about this movie that we? I mean, we could just keep talking about it and its influence, like on every movie that came after it.
Well, you know, too. This is. I was just thinking this as we were talking about it. Is that of the four we've watched, the only one? Even though I mean, I know I said I liked Nightmare as a better series, but. Nightmare on Elm Street.
It's a better whole series than all of them because its sequels have a better cohesiveness.
Freddy is also the only one of these of Leatherface, Michael, and Jason that actually shows some kind of facial reactions.
Well, has a personality.
Has a personality. Yeah, these are all nameless. Not nameless, but faceless, just blank killers.
But that's what I've always loved about Jason, though. Is it's weirdly enough, like especially I always think of Jason Takes Manhattan after he comes up to the gang who, you know, get all in his face and he scares the shit out of him by pulling his mask up and then he looks at the screen. He pulls the mask back down and kind of looks at the screen like breaking the fourth wall. And you just know he's like sitting there like smirking and it's like, yeah, that's right. You know, it's like there are, I feel like he does have facial expressions even though we don't ever see them. Michael does not though. I mean, there's nothing human about Michael Myers is what comes down to it.
And maybe it was the limitations of what Carpenter was doing that didn't allow him to elaborate on just how, I mean, we get descriptions of, you know, just how evil he is, but again, it's just like that whole thing of someone telling you in a movie that, you know, oh my god, this is the most amazing creature you've ever seen, and we never see the creature.
But I mean, I think you're right. What else is he gonna do or show? I mean, other than, you know, have something where he's been in jail and while he's in jail he crushed the throat of some sort of orderly or something like that. I mean, I think the fact of the matter is Loomis
knows. Which doesn't he do in Rob Zombie's?
Yeah, that's what I love. Loomis knows he's evil because he's spent 15 years with him and he's done nothing but just like Loomis says, I mean, he's
waiting
figured
for
out
the moment to escape. Like he's waited. Like he's waited patiently to murder people. Like that's pretty fucking dark.
Yeah, those like, dark eyes. Like he says, the devil's eyes, and all he's been doing is looking at that night. You just don't know when that night's gonna come.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that. I personally don't find like equate the amount of evil to how many people someone's killed. Like I just finished the book about Zodiac. I found that guy to be utterly evil. He didn't. I mean, Robert Graysmith went crazy like estimating who Zodiac could have killed, but like a conservative estimate is 5. Like he killed roughly 5 to 7 people, maybe 10. But the way that he taunted the police and seemed to brag on murdering people and bragged about wanting to blow up a school bus, like that's pure evil in my eyes. Like I think that's just like an awful thing. I don't really believe in evil as a concept. I just think, but if we're going to talk about it in those terms, like what Michael did was just the meditation on it and the motivation was just awful darkness.
Darkness.
So, I think maybe we, like you said, we could talk about all it. So I think we should pull back and talk about all four for just a little bit.
Okay.
You know, and not a lot, but sit there because we've been talking for a while. But I mean, come back to it. Like, I mean, apparently we've got kind of your rank then, Brian, is what?
I would say of my favorite, I would say of the series, I would put it as.
Not as good series.
Huh?
Not as just the series. Movies.
The movies?
Four movies.
Oh, the four movies we've done, I would go. I'd go Nightmare, Halloween, Friday the 13th. I'd go Nightmare, Halloween, Texas Chainsaw, Friday the 13th.
Okay.
Are we talking quality? Like, what's the best? Just or which one will we watch?
I'm talking about, I'm just saying my qualifications of what I enjoyed, of the four, which ones I enjoyed watching the most and have had a, which ones I enjoyed watching the most. That would be it.
I mean, it could be based on, favorite. Best, however you deem it.
Identification with the killer.
Yeah.
I mean, I would just quickly, I would say that I'd probably still say Halloween top, Nightmare and Friday. I don't know. Because I still like watching Friday the 13th more than I like watching Nightmare on Elm Street. Ultimately, like, I had more fun this time watching Nightmare on Elm Street because I got to think about it. But if I'm going to sit down and watch a horror movie, I think I'd still rather watch Friday the 13th than Nightmare on Elm Street. And then I'd round it out with... I mean, Texas Chainsaw Massacre is just so hard to sit down and watch and enjoy. Like, it's not an enjoyable experience.
Well, Tyler's wrong. Let's move on to the next person.
Okay.
I mean... There's no doubt that Halloween remains far and away number one there.
But I also watch it. Like, I love to watch that movie, too.
Yeah. Well, yeah, just in quality, but also in watchability and in all of those things. I really enjoy it.
Right.
I would have Nightmare second, although it just like the next movie, not the next movie, I still would probably put Texas Chainsaw Massacre third because I'd just rather watch any Friday the 13th than Friday the 13th at this point. And I think that's the thing. I'd watch any other, I guess. But even that being said, I'd still rather as much as I like Nightmare on Elm Street, I'd still rather watch Nightmare on Elm Street 3.
Yeah.
That's the other thing, too. I'd rather watch
DreamWorks. Cool.
To do my order, I would say Halloween, Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, some Friday the 13th that isn't 1 and
2
isn't
is still pretty awesome.
Next time, I won't go first, considering you guys fucking cheated and used other films.
I mean, I would say. I still think Friday the 13th Part 2 is pretty entertaining.
I agree.
Yeah. I really like the end.
The stupid 3D effects.
I like in 2, I like the protagonist a lot better. The main girl. Like, what is her name? She did some other stuff. She was on, like, wasn't she on a soap opera at one point or something?
She's on Degrassi.
No, she wasn't. Anyway,
I would say Scream, Hellraiser. Oh, wait, that's next year. Sorry.
Next year,
we have to do 4 more if we're still doing this.
Let's take a pick. Let's just go ahead and get a pulse for what we do. We do Scream, Hellraiser. Scream, Hellraiser, and what
Hang
else?
Hang on. You're putting Scream out there, but we haven't got... Let's say Hellraiser.
Right.
Scream. We don't know if Scream's in that group yet, right? Couldn't there be other ones that Scream, push a Scream out?
No.
We got a lot of Hellraiser's in it. I'm going to go Scream over Hellraiser.
Yeah, we got a lot to talk about. No.
I mean, I like Hellraiser.
You can't.
I'm just saying. I just can't.
Pumpkinhead.
I think Scream is that good. Scream is.
What about Nightbreed?
At the top of them all. No, if we're doing
this is not a series. Like, I think we should do series. Like the first movie in a series.
Yeah.
If Evil Dead maybe.
Evil Dead's fine. Saw is still. I mentioned and I shot back on it first, but the more I think about it, I mean, it works. There's another one.
I want to resist Saw. Like, I keep seeing like it's their 10th anniversary, and I keep saying, fuck you, Saw. But I'm like, the Saw wasn't that bad. The first one wasn't that bad.
The first three aren't that bad.
Yeah. I like four even. Four was brutal at parts. Like, the fourth one is the one where they do five is bad. Four is still okay because they start with the autopsy, like they're cutting his brain out and stuff. I still liked four. I thought four was pretty good.
No.
Wow, that's a series.
But that feels different though. I know what you mean. It is a series, but it just feels different.
Requiem for a Dream.
I still think Scream, Saw, Hellraiser, and Evil Dead.
We have a whole year to talk about this.
We'll say candidates right now, okay? We'll say candidates right now.
Hey, and if anybody's listening, they have suggestions.
We can watch the first Candyman.
Yeah, we could.
Candyman, yeah, that's a good idea.
Let's get Tubbit another great score, and Philip Glass's score for that is fucking awesome. God damn, it's good.
Hellraiser's got a great score,
too. Why would we watch Silence of the Lambs? We'd have to watch Manhunter.
Christopher, huh?
We'd totally watch Manhunter.
Sure, we could do that.
But I'm not for either of those in that situation.
All right, well, we have a whole year to think about this.
Jump directly to the second one of all these movies.
If you're listening a year later, jump directly to next year's four to see what we picked. If you're listening a year from the future.
Drew's idea. We just do the second ones of all these.
Okay. I'm fine with that.
Sold.
I love just to talk about Clue Gulager.
I mean, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 would be a really fine movie to do.
I Live and Dead remake or the Return of Living Dead. Well, we'll fucking talk about it.
We'll talk about it later.
We'll run out of horror.
We'll do something completely different a year from now. We're like, oh, fuck, we had good ideas last year.
Well, good thing this is on recorded, so we can always go back and reference it.
But we won't. But we absolutely won't. Like, we never
We need
do.
To have Shannon is been listening to all our episodes. It's like, we need to have him on for a retrospective.
Shannon should be sort of the he is used to keeping records of things. Like, he loves owning media, so it seems like he's the curator of the Horrible Podcast.
I told him that he just made it to the episode of where we switched opening songs.
Awesome. God, so, how long is
John dies at the end.
Whoa.
Yeah,
crazy.
God, what all right, yeah, so guys, thanks for sticking with us for these last four episodes.
It's been fun.
It's been fun. I enjoy doing the classic stuff because we talk about it all the time, but we don't really discuss them in great detail. So,
oh man, we've got some great new stuff coming up though.
Yeah,
next few weeks are going to be real.
Horns
awesome.
Is going to be awesome.
I can't even wait for the next few weeks. I think I'm going to go ahead and watch them all on Friday on Halloween and just get it out of the way. It's like,
I think we underestimated how many movies would come out in October when we did this because we have Horns, Housebound, The Babadook. We have Open Windows,
Mockingbird,
VHS Viral, ABC's of Death 2. Oh my God!
So we have a lot of content.
Yeah,
I
want to
do Mockingbird so bad. I want to see it so bad. Okay. I don't care whether it's good or not. I just want to see it.
We'll do it, guys.
Brian Bertino forever.
If you have watched us on UStream, I'm sorry for my face.
I'm sorry for his face too. Or on YouTube later when this goes up on YouTube.
We can put it on YouTube?
We might. I'm thinking about it.
All right, cool. Thanks for listening. If you're in Chattanooga or around, I'd say if you're within an hour or maybe hour and a half drive, come see the Babadook. You're not going to be able to see it anywhere else in the country until November.
But you also get to see
Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Demon's Rook.
Yeah.
And you get to see me in my full glorious costume.
Oh, that's right. But you just apologize for them having to see you right now.
Well, I'll be made up. It'll be fine.
Different.
Yeah. My hair will be different. I'll have my beard all fucked up. I'm Brian.
I'm Tyler.
And I'm Drew.
And this has been another episode of the Horrible Podcast.
Happy Halloween.